He's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Christmas Eve edition of the Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management. And I'm here with Barry Kite, our chartered financial analyst and certified financial planner. And it's one of those good news is bad news days. The GDP, U.S. GDP came in hot, 4.3%. And we've got kind of a mixed market, a sell-off in the bond market. The Dow's down 17 points to 48,345. The NASDAQ has now gone negative. It's down 42 points to 23,386. The S&P 500 is down 5. But the bond market, we're seeing 4.20 for the first time in quite some time. We finished yesterday at 4.17. Good news is bad news. Now we probably won't get a January rate cut. I tell you, the market is always worried about something. Gold is up, however, hitting a new all-time high, 4,482. And the mining stocks were just on fire yesterday. I'm going to go through some of those today. Crude oil can't get out of its own way. It's at 57.82. And on that same vein, it seems like crypto can't get out of its own way. Crypto seems to be very sensitive to the Fed and rate cuts and interest rates. It's down 3,000 today to 7,006. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management, also the chief market strategist and chief investment officer. I wear a lot of hats here at Gunderson Capital, so does Barry Kite. He's just got a few more designations after his name than I do. And, you know, Barry, we've learned a lot about Bitcoin here in the recent months. Just when you thought it was the safe harbor, I never thought that, but a lot of people thought, oh, this is the alternative, this is the safe harbor. We found out, number one, it's very sensitive to interest rates and the Fed. And number two, it's kind of got a confidence crisis taking place right now. And it's negative for the year, you know, after hitting 125,000, it's languishing down here at 87,000. To me, it's taken a hit. It's taken a confidence hit. I don't know that it can get its confidence back, its sea legs back, because it really doesn't have anything to stand on. From my perspective, it really doesn't have anything to stand on. There's no underlying value there.
Bunch of zeros and ones, right?
Yes, other than it trades, it's marketable, it's it trades plenty of volume, it's used by the world round. But I think we've learned a lot about Bitcoin, and I think all of those fellas and gals that we saw touting Bitcoin as their top pick for 2025, that was back in January of this year when we were up at the NASDAQ building. You know, they didn't do so well with their top pick. Now, we had just an unbelievable day in the market yesterday, and it was all the tide really came in and filled a lot of those speculative creeks for the day, but you may see some of that water going out here today. It was all about, man, I'll tell you, yesterday the quantum stocks, Rigetti, QUBT were red hot. You had the mining stocks, copper hitting $12,000 a ton. The aluminum stocks, look at AA, which is Alcoa. Alcoa was hitting new highs yesterday. Anything gold, AG, which is silver, actually platinum was on fire yesterday. IMPUY, PPLT, will it last? I mean, all that stuff is really extended right now to the upside. It would be pretty dangerous stepping into it at this point. And with that news yesterday on Rocket Labs, the space exploration stocks, which I don't know, you know, look, is it profitable? Is it a growth industry? Well, we'd be sending private flights to the moon this year. But stocks like Lunar, L-U-N-R, ASTS, which is nothing more than satellite internet, much like Starlink, Rocket Labs was probably the stock of the day. When it comes to blue chips, I would call Citigroup the stock of the day yesterday. The financials on fire. So it was that really speculative area of the market yesterday that was just sizzling. The gold stocks like Barrick and Agnico Eagle were red hot. Micron hit a new all-time high yesterday. And then today we get that news on the GDP, gross domestic product. You know, here's the difference. Canada was minus 0.3, you know, another negative quarter, and they would be in recession. I got to believe that they're hurting from the tariffs placed by Trump on them. And at the same time, we put in a 4.3% quarter. And that drops the odds for a rate cut, the probability of a rate cut in January, considerably.
Yeah, we're only sitting at, I think it's like 16% now. It was, you know, of a cut in January. And I mean, regardless of, you know, how you slice the data up, I mean, that's a huge number.
Huge.
Dive into it a little bit more, and you know, obviously there were some delays in terms of. You know, with the government shutdown, so it, you know, it'd be interesting to pick through it and see just how well things were. It was interesting. You got durable goods orders today, which
down
was down. So
yes.
it's kind of a mixed bag. I think you know, to me, I think overall it probably shouldn't change the rate picture at all, even though it has, you know, this morning.
But GDP is the one. All watch, really. I mean, that carries much, much more weight than the durable goods orders. So, you know, look, I mean, Trump 24/7 criticism, pretty much 24/7 criticism for most of your media outlets. And yet, you know, 4.3% GDP.
Pretty good number.
That's a pretty good number. Canada, by contrast, is minus 0.3%. Spain comes in at 2.6% today, 2.6%, and I would say that the European Union's probably running somewhere in the low twos right now. Now, with that gain in the market yesterday, let's see, the S&P 500's forward PE goes to 22.7. It's inching closer and closer to that 23 ceiling. Now, it doesn't mean that it will hit 23, bump its head, and then back off. But that's what it's done over the last 5 years. So, you know, that's all we can look at. We know that there's some resistance there. There's an obstacle there at 23 times forward earnings. We are in a, you know, a favorable rate environment with interest rates dropping. But then you get this big hit today to the bond market. Today's a full day in the market. I want to say tomorrow's a half day.
It's going to end at 1. Yeah, so tomorrow's, I think, market closes at 1, and then, of course, a closed day on Christmas Day, and then back wide open, I think, full day on Friday. So.
Somewhere I was hearing of Trump floating a three-day federal holiday, the Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, and the day after Christmas. Think what that would do to Black Friday shopping or the day after Christmas, whatever they call that. That's returns,
that would turn that into
right?
a boxing. Yeah, in the UK, it's Boxing Day, which I believe is basically Return Day. So put everything back in the box and take it back.
or put it in the closet and re-gift it to someone you don't like next year.
Right.
That goes on, you know, from time to time. Anyways, 4.3%. The consensus was 3.2. So that's a huge blowout number on GDP. And you say, well, why isn't the market just blasting off today with an economy like that? Well, the other side of that equation is inflation and our friendly Fed, our friends at the Fed. Jerome Powell is going to really tighten up the purse strings here after this report today. So they're saying the Santa Claus rally is here. I don't know. We're kind of losing a little steam here today. That's the good news. The bad news is now prepare for the January effect. You know, look, can't we just, are we already worried about the January effect? The January effect has been the worst performing month of the year for the momentum investors, which tracks the performance of market leaders versus laggards over a prior 12-month period. December outperformance often reflects tax loss harvesting, where investors sell losing stocks to offset capital gains, making January the worst month for momentum strategies. We'll be right back.
I'll be gone 500 miles when the day is done.
Welcome back here to the second quarter of today's Best Stocks Now show. Well, you know, oil prices, I continue to watch that. You always hope, you're always looking for an investable sector to all of a sudden start taking off. And oil just has had a lot of false starts, but who knows, maybe. You never know. You watch it every day. And the situation in the world right now, the United States has begun aggressively pursuing oil tankers operating near Venezuela as part of a new legal strategy aimed at confiscating vessels involved in the global trade of sanctioned oil. Now, you would think that would be bullish for oil. Instead, it's been bullish for gold and silver, as you know. That's you know, it's a pretty provocative action there by us. Unlike those earlier ships, which were carrying close to 2 million barrels of Venezuelan crude when boarded, this one that was boarded yesterday was not carrying nearly that much. But where will this all lead? I mean, we're basically putting up an embargo around Venezuela to choke them off, to pressure Maduro. And, you know, down the line, what will it do in Cuba? Will this lead to a regime change in Cuba as they're being choked off, too? So anyways, the two commodities that seems to be impacting the most are gold and silver. And oil has not really budged at all. But, you know, that action there in the Caribbean continues to heat up. A little bit on the scary side, will the drug lords lash out? I mean, China is behind Venezuela. Mexico's got ties to China. It's just a big trouble spot in the world right now.
You mentioned yesterday Cuba relying on oil from Venezuela, so that's another wrinkle into this mix.
Big time.
And then on top of that, you know, it's interesting. I was listening to some, you know, in terms of gold and precious metals outlook for next year, and you know, Russia's been a big buyer of gold, particularly during this. While they've been under sanctions, and it'd be interesting to see, you know, if you have any progress, right, on you know, some form of peace between, you know, Russia and Ukraine, how that will, you know, potentially affect gold prices as, you know, maybe some of their Russian finances open up a bit more to the world as that conflict kind of winds down. It'll be, you know, kind of interesting to see how that affects gold.
Well, that's just further testimony to the fact that when times get tough and there's a worry, they run to gold. Okay,
yeah.
Look, that's where Putin's running to because he knows that it holds its intrinsic value, and that gold hit hitting all time highs. It's above 4,400, and silver's above $62. Now, I watched Huntington Ingalls HII just taking off yesterday, along with several other defense stocks. Let's see. I've got that in my notes. I know HI was one of them. Oh, yeah, and the other one was ISSC, and it seems that Trump unveiled plans for a new Trump-class battleship. Probably have his picture on it and his name, and they'll sell little models to people on TV and whatnot. But anyways, the USS Defiant, depicting a futuristic warship slicing through rough seas, firing advanced weaponry, and sailing past iconic American landmarks. And, you know, I heard that South Korea is going to start building some ships for us. But Huntington Ingalls, which is up in Newport News, that's a big shipyard, they're always behind schedule, and I guess we're going to start to ramp things up to try to keep up with China. But anyway, some new lethal battleships on the drawing board, calling them Trump class. Guess what else is back in the news here? And I watched this little stock. Let's see, who's the Greenland? CRML is the Greenland Earth rare earth stock. As Trump said again that U.S. needs to take over Greenland for its national security, and appointed Louisiana Governor Jeff Landry as his special envoy to the island to lead the charge. Well, maybe there's a little bit of irony there. Yeah, I was going to say, maybe. Now, I don't have a problem with purchasing it, but I don't think it's for sale. Invading it and taking it over, that would be a little on the provocative side.
Yeah, I like the idea of investing in it, right? I mean, like we can call it what we want, right? It's like it probably is in our national security interest, but at the same time, it's like, you know, I feel like if you want to, kind of like playing Risk with my dad over the years, it was whatever you wanted to do. You don't tell him that you want to take it over.
There's been plenty of that happen over the years. Trump says, if you take a look at Greenland, you have Russian and Chinese ships all over the place. We have to have it, and that's part of that. You know, the Western Hemisphere belongs to the U.S. is kind of what the theory is there. Okay, we now have a pill for obesity. And, you know, it's funny that Novo Nordisk is up like 9% or something like that, and Lilly's down. But it's just a matter of time until Lilly has a obesity pill of their own. And, you know, we were right about the cost. The cost for the Wegovy pill, $149 a month. Right now, the shot from Lilly, if you go directly to Lilly, for the shot of Zepbound, it's $449 per month. And that is a, that's a deterrent. There's no question about it for people that want to try it. You know, I heard, I was listening to Squawk Talk this morning, Joe Kernan. And, he could use a few pounds off. And he said, I just love to eat. I don't even want to try it. I don't want to lose my appetite for good food and this and that. But, I thought to myself, it really is not that difficult. I mean, you know, look, I've been on it. There's no question. I don't hide it. I eat my own cooking, right? I own Lilly stock.
Right.
And I'm a testament to the fact that it works. I should be getting it for free, and my picture should be on the box. I endorse this product. It really is the easiest diet I've ever been on, and the weight just falls off. And you do not lose your craving for food and whatnot. I wish I could talk to Joe Kernan. Maybe I'll send him an email and say, Joe, it's really not that bad. And, you know, imagine the health benefits from it. So, anyway, $149.
Joe doesn't want to curb his thirst for coffee.
And he said he snacks all day long on goodies. Okay, that's not good, Joe. Copper prices, we talked about that, $12,000 for the first time amid tariff disruptions. Copper stocks continue to surge. Okay, when we come back, Citigroup with some of their top picks for next year. We'll be right back. Well, the top brass don't
like him talking so much, and he won't play what they say to play.
This is Bill Gunderson. Thank you for tuning in to today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. I put several hours of research in during the wee hours of the morning each day to bring you the very best cutting-edge stories that I can. To get 2 free weeks of my newsletter, go to GundersonCapital.com. To talk to us about our fee-based only money management services, call us at 855-611-BEST. Now, back to the second half of the show.
Welcome back here to the second half of today's Best Stocks Now show. Well, Citigroup thinks that the AI opportunity, we're still in a super cycle, there's no question about that, but the risk-to-reward ratio is getting thinner, there's no question about that either. I mean, those days of Micron going up 170% per year have slowed down, and the chips, other chip stocks have slowed down. But still, if you're looking for growth, I mean, you're not going to find it in the railroads. You're not going to find it in the oil stocks. You're not going to find it in the industrials. It's still pretty much centered in hovering over Silicon Valley, up in the cloud there that overhangs the valley. That's where the growth is still in the market. Their number one chip stock for 2026 is a little bit of a surprise to me, and I'm going to see how it stacks up in the app. They like Microchip Technologies. MCHP is their top pick in the electronic or the semiconductor sector. Well, you know, I make it very simple. When I see somebody with a top pick, or I hear a story on TV or radio or wherever, a podcast, whatever the case may be, I first look up the performance of the stock. And Microchip has been a big laggard when you compare it to the rest of the market, number one, let alone the semiconductor sector, which is one of the best sectors in the entire market, if not the best. Microchip has only delivered 13% annual returns over the last 10 years, while the S&P has been 24%. That's a big negative for me. And as I look at the last 5 years, it's really not delivered anything. It's been a flat stock. Now, year to date, it's done a little bit better. It's up 19%, but that's not exactly eye-popping, with an S&P up just 16%. Now, let's look at the valuation here. I got to admit that the chip stocks are a little bit expensive. But, I mean, a lot of them still meet my criteria of 80% upside potential or more over the next 5 years. My current value on Microchip is horrible. Well, let's see. It all depends on the growth rate. Oh, I've got that's way too hot. The consensus growth rate is 32%. Now, it ain't going to achieve that. There's no way. So sometimes I have to overwrite.
Not on a five-year scale. Yeah, right.
The app as the default goes to the consensus 5-year growth rate. And when I see something that's out of whack, I guess I haven't looked at Microchip for a while. The consensus is 32%. No way. There's no way in heck that it's going to do that. It's actually had negative growth for the last several years. So we're going to lower that considerably. But I don't see that as my top pick. If you're going to use 32% growth, I'd be all over it, because then you've got 200% upside potential. Now, there's an example of AI, artificial intelligence, about 5 o'clock Eastern Standard Time each evening. The app goes out and pulls in data. the new data, new closing price, the price 1 year ago, the price 1 year ago, the price 5 years ago, the price 10 years ago, does all the calculations on the performance. That's cut and dried, okay? And as it relates to valuation, it pulls in the current earnings estimates for 2026. It pulls in the five-year consensus growth rate, and then I have a calculation for the multiple that it picks up. Now, unless I overwrite that growth rate, once I override it, it's overwritten, and it's obvious I haven't overwritten Microchip for a while, and I need to do that. But the artificial intelligence is telling me that the stock has 232% upside. That means it would triple in the next 5 years. Okay, that tells you that something is out of whack, and I can see where the problem is. Now, this is pretty rare. You know, I would say 90% of my valuations are good, but once in a while you get an anomaly that you then have to put HI. You remember HI, Barry, yeah. Human intelligence? You have to use a little bit of reason. You know, it's like taking your hands off. I have my car has assistance, driving assistance, where it's supposed to keep you between the lines as you're on a long straightaway. I've noticed it drifts all over the place. I don't trust it. I put my hands on the wheel. Human intelligence tells me that my car is not there yet, even close to it, to taking the hands off the wheel and looking at stock charts while I'm driving down the highway. No, I don't want to end up in the ditch. upside down in the ditch is not fun. So anyways, you have to deploy human intelligence over that artificial intelligence from time to time. So anyways, that's their top pick. But they also like Broadcom and NVIDIA, and so do I. I think that entering the new year, those are still two stocks. If you're going to look for the best 25 stocks in the market right now, for me, those two are in that category. Okay. AI, that would be another prediction for 2026. I think the field is going to continue to narrow, okay? Right now, it's Google that has assumed the top spot with their Gemini 3 in AI. And ChatGPT with Microsoft has fallen to number two. And OpenAI is behind ChatGPT, so it would be by, being linked to it. It's also fallen to number two. But it's a heated race. I mean, they're not going to just roll over. And then you've got Grok with Elon Musk, and you've got others. Tencent-backed Minimax. Tencent Holdings, obviously one of the largest tech stocks in the world, $400 billion in market cap, they're going to use Minimax, which is a Chinese rival to OpenAI. And then, you know, remember about a year ago there was the story of DeepSeek, which was another Chinese version. So at the end of the day, there will be a lot of versions, but there's going to be a couple dominant ones that eventually emerge. Right now, you know, Google seems to be in the pole position, but it's precarious. It's a precarious lead that they have. You know, someday you could wake up and all of a sudden ChatGPT, it would be backed by OpenAI, has assumed the top spot. And just like the GLP race, Novo Nordisk, all of a sudden, the first one to market with the pill. But Novo has proven that they can't seem to keep up with Lilly as far as market share. And I think when Lilly, we'll have to see where Lilly, I think within the next 30 days you're going to see a pill from Lilly. Well, where will the pricing be, right?
Yeah, now, they've been manufacturing. So, I mean, Lilly's also been manufacturing the pill. They've just got it, you know, they just have to get it approved. So yep. They're in the approval process. Like I said, they've thoroughly expected to be approved given the you know, ramp up in production that they've already had, and so they'll be ready to roll that thing out, right? And like you said, it'll be, you know, depends on what the pricing is, how much, you know, cannibalization do you have, you know, versus say the shot. You know, I've heard They're trying to differentiate between the two, right? The pill or the shot. And, you know, there's certain maybe efficacies in certain situations where one might be preferred versus the other. So,
yeah. So we'll see. I mean, don't count Lily out. It's just a matter of time. If Lily's down today, that's probably a buying opportunity in Lily stock. I think they've only just begun. When a guy like Joe Kernan's not on it yet, you know, there's a long ways to go to convince people that it works. You know, I think price has been a barrier, and I think a shot in the stomach has been a barrier. Okay, how about high dividend yields? There's a list out today of small caps with dividend yields that surpass the 10-year Treasury yield. Okay, well, here's just a few. You can buy Apple Hospitality REIT, 8.1% dividend. Armada Hoffler Properties, which I believe is a lot of office space, 9.5% dividend yield. Here's Granite Ridge Resources, dividend yield 8.5%. When we come back, Barry's going to explain why that 8.1, that 9.5 dividend yield may not just equal that by the end of the year next year. Why is that when we come back? Welcome back here to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show. We've gone through this high dividend yield strategy many times in the past. Number one, okay, so they're not telling you, it's just a list. These are high dividend paying small caps. Number one, the small cap market, Russell 2000, is really a garbage pile. You know, as I look through those 2,000 stocks, there's maybe 100 out of 2,000 that are worth anything, that have any kind of growth or quality, okay? And the other 1,900 are garbage. I like to pick on the S&P or the Russell 2000 from time to time when the market is weak and when there's risk aversion. Those stocks get slammed. Okay, number two, yes, there are a lot of high dividend yields in that category, Barry. And, you know, you'll see them featured in Seeking Alpha, you know, retire on this dividend yield.
They may
what's
be high
wrong
dividend
with
payers
this
for a reason. Yeah, I mean,
yes, what's wrong with this picture, an 8.5% dividend yield?
Yeah, the point, I mean, what a company is really saying that has a high dividend yield is they're telling the investor, hey, you can do better with this money than we can, right? And, I mean, obviously, they're the corporation. They should be able to, you know, in terms of ROE, you know, high ROE or return on investment, high ROA, high ROI projects. So if they don't have any of those growth opportunities, what do? You give it back to the investor. So essentially, if you've got a company with a 10%, you know, dividend yield, what they're doing is taking 10% of the company and giving it to their investors, right? And so in doing that, that company automatically, all else being equal, is going to go down 10% as soon as they declare that dividend. And then they've got to grow their way back up 10%, right, to, or 11% in that, to do that math to get back to even before they even are netting you, you know, any kind of return. So,
you know, a lot of people don't understand that math, but a company has a balance sheet which lists their assets on the books, which would include cash, buildings, equipment, okay, and then, of course, they have their debt, and the bottom line is their net worth. If you've got $500,000 in cash, or let's just say $5 million in cash, and you pay out a dividend in cash of $500,000, let's say, you've lowered your cash, you've lowered your equity not equity. You've lowered your
total assets went down.
Your total,
I mean, it just went down 500
by 500,000. So the value of the company drops when the dividend is paid. If I've got a bank account with 100,000 in it and I pay out Christmas gifts of $10,000, I went down. My net worth went down by 10,000. I'm at 90,000. People don't realize that. You're basically getting back your own money. On one side of the ledger, you own the stock, okay, and you watch the stock go up and down. On the other side of the ledger, the stock is kicking off income. And when they pay you that income, your cash goes up, your personal balance sheet goes up on the cash side. But over on the stock side, the value of the stock goes down. It's an offsetting transaction. It's an offsetting transaction. Now, if the value of the stock remained the same somehow, magically, and it can. I mean, the market can just ignore the dividend. But eventually, push comes to shove, and there's less cash that the company has because they've paid it out.
A lot of times you can probably see it from the chart. I mean, you'll see these step downs, right? So apparently, you know, let's just say the stock starts at $100. They pay $10, and you'll see the stock will drop, you know, $10 when it's declared, and now it's at 90. And then watch and see if the stock gets back to 100 before they pay the next dividend, right? And if they don't, then over time you're going to see this downward trend in price, and that's a, you know, telltale sign of essentially a company, you know, giving you your money back, essentially your own money back over time.
Yeah, they're draining themselves until it gets to be an emergency, and then they cut the dividend, which we've seen some of that here recently where they cut the dividend because if they don't, they're going to go to zero. They're going to run out of cash. They're going to not have liquidity to pay their bills. So dividend investing is a very much a two-edged sword. It's not what it's cracked up to be. Just looking, I mean, there's guys on Seeking Alpha, the dividend yield's really all they look at, and the ability to cover that dividend, okay? That's the other thing, the ability to cover it. Do they have cash on hand? Do they have liquid assets that they can unload, treasuries or short-term bonds or whatever, and that they can continue to pay that dividend with. And it's just, I think it's a lousy strategy. For that reason, we got rid of our dividend and growth strategy because it's not really a very good strategy. You're just not going to get alpha. It's very hard to squeeze alpha out of a company that's paying a dividend, unless it's a stock like NVIDIA that pays a tiny little dividend yield and gives you massive growth on the other side of the ledger. And at the end of the investment, when you've added it up, you have to add in, look at these dividends that I've received along the way, and how has the stock done along the way? Add those two together, it's total return. And the other thing you look at, when you look at the historical price of a stock, when it pays the dividend off, you'll see the stock price adjusted. Your buy-in price is adjusted because you've received the dividend yield. But the price goes down of the stock when you receive the dividend yield. So anyways, that's just the way it goes. That's something to take into account. And if you're in a dividend strategy, we knocked a stock, Verizon, not too long ago. How even with you've done worse in the stock than the dividend yield. And someone said to me, wrote on the comments, well, it's going to become a dividend aristocrat pretty soon. Okay, all right, but we'll invest in dividend aristocrats then. Just look at the performance of the dividend aristocrat ETF versus just the standard S&P 500. Well, we're out of time. Tomorrow, I think, is a half day. I'll be working all day. I expect light trading in the market today, but you never know. Maybe we'll uncover a gem or two today. I'll be sending out different messages throughout the day. Have a great day. To get the newsletter trial, GundersonCapital.com. To set up an appointment with us, 855-611-BEST. Have a great day, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Charles Schwab. Schwab is a member of SIPC and FINRA.